You're listening to Strange Familiars, true stories of the paranormal, cryptids, hauntings, the occult, mythology, UFOs, folklore, weird and forgotten history. Please make sure to like and subscribe to Strange Familiars on iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or wherever you are listening. Please share the Strange Familiars page and episodes on Facebook and other social media. If you have experienced something strange, or if you know a story you would like us to cover, email strangefamiliarspodcast@gmail.com or find us on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars, and of course, strangefamiliars.com.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. On tonight's show, we are going to be talking with Brian Seach. Brian is a paranormal investigator and a writer, and he hosts a paranormal conference in Butler, Pennsylvania. He runs the Center for Cryptozoological Studies. Brian's done a lot of research in the paranormal field, and we will have him back on to talk about his own research at some point. We do get into a little bit of that tonight. But the reason I brought Brian on tonight was mainly to talk about a book. And the book is called Chasing the Elusive Pennsylvania Bigfoot, A Cryptid from Another Reality. It's by Paul G. Johnson. Dr. Johnson, who wrote the book, he doesn't do radio interviews, so he sort of nominated Brian as his guy to do press and interviews and so forth for him. And speaking of Bigfoot, I want to give a shout out to Nathan Whitmore. He is the one who posted the Bigfoot photo, which we talked about last episode. Nathan posted it to the Where Did the Rogue Go group on Facebook. That indeed was where I first saw it. I think when we were doing the episode, I didn't remember which group I first saw it in. It had appeared in more than one group, in my defense. And people were sharing it around individually as well. But the Where Did the Rogue Go group is the first place I saw the photo. So, Nathan Whitmore, here's your shout out. Sorry we forgot you last episode. Hopefully this makes up for it. If you like what we do, if you enjoy Strange Familiars, please consider becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/strangefamiliars. $3 a month gets you bonus episodes. We try to do one full bonus episode every month for our patrons, sometimes more. But there are other levels too if you want other rewards like t-shirts or pins, stickers, etc., etc. There's lots of different levels to choose from there. At this point, we don't take advertisements. We don't have any kind of funding other than our patrons. It's our patrons that make Strange Familiars happen. So thank you for your support, patrons. And again, if you like what we do, patreon.com/strangefamiliars. Tonight we're talking with Brian Seach. Brian's going to be talking with us on behalf of Dr. Paul Johnson. His book is called Chasing the Elusive Pennsylvania Bigfoot, A Cryptid from Another Reality. That is published by Visionary Living Publishing, and you can get it on Amazon and anywhere you get books, you can pick that up. This is probably my favorite book written on Bigfoot, and I'm really, really happy that it's finally available, because before you had to go to Dr. Johnson directly, who, by the way, was super nice about it. When I was writing my first book, I wrote him and said, you know, I was doing this research, and he sent me it for free, his self-published version of this. So, I mean, heck of a nice guy, very supportive. Like I said, he's written what is about my favorite book on the subject here. So it's a pleasure to be talking about it. Dr. Johnson doesn't give interviews, right, Brian?
Yes, Tim. He does not like to do radio interviews, so it was suggested that, you know, that I do the interview for him. or else he would be on. He kind of likes to be in the background. He doesn't really like to talk about himself much. So being that we've worked with him for years, they decided I could speak for him. So
that's fine. Well, before we get into Dr. Johnson stuff, just very quickly, you've written some books yourself. You've been researching this phenomenon for a long time. Just a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get into Dr. Johnson's book.
Yeah, well, I basically put together, I wouldn't actually say wrote the books. We put together some anthologies, I guess you would call them. They're basically, I've done one on Beaver County, on Butler County, one in Ohio, one on Bigfoot and UFOs, and basically we just collected a bunch of reports and like put them in, we call them booklets, and a little bit of our own thoughts and things like that, and some of our research. We've written, I think, 9 of them, and they're just kind of self-published. We just sell them at conferences, and we're actually working on a local book here where we live in Beaver County, so it's coming along really slow, a lot slower than we want, but we do want to get something out about our county. Basically, we've been researching, my wife and I, since 1986. Our first group was Q, Center for Unexplained Events. We still have that group today. We started that group only with 4 members, and 3 were family members, and my friend Dave Maughan. So we started to collect and research everything under the paranormal umbrella, ghosts, UFOs, Bigfoot, everything. We started to collect newspaper articles, magazines. We got out when we could on some investigations, ghost investigations, and things like that. And so in 2012, we formed our new group, which is the Center for Cryptozoological Studies. And we took all of the strange cryptid reports, and basically I run that group now, and my wife runs the former group, which is Q. So we've been doing it a long time. We have a huge paranormal library downstairs, one of the second or third biggest in the state. And I know you came to one of our conferences. We co-promote the Butler Conference, the Butler Paranormal Conference. I believe you were there, I think, 2 years ago.
Yep.
Next year will be our 12th annual, and it will be on, I believe it's April 6th, the first Saturday of April. So hopefully you can make it this year.
Oh, it's a great conference. It was just timing this year. I couldn't make it back, but yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I recommend anybody who can make it. So I'm kind of on the east central side of Pennsylvania, and you guys are out on the west side for people who, mm-hmm. May not know the counties we're talking about and so forth. Most of your investigations, and indeed most of this book, kind of covers that area out there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Paul basically researched the Chestnut Ridge, and that's a 90-mile ridge that goes from Indiana County down into West Virginia. So that's the bulk of his research was on that ridge.
Yeah, and it's well known for strange activity, Bigfoot, UFOs, all kinds mm-hmm. of stuff. Yeah. So you've worked closely with Dr. Johnson then?
Yes, we've known Paul, I believe, since probably 2002 or 2003. First time we met Paul, we were all members of the PA Bigfoot Society, and we met him on an investigation in Indiana Township along a power line. 2 eyewitnesses observed a creature walking along the power line, and that's where we first met Paul. Paul since has worked some UFO cases with us, and also a good share of Bigfoot cases with our a new group, which he is a founding member, the Center for Cryptozoological Studies.
This book, again, is called Chasing the Elusive Pennsylvania Bigfoot. It's by Dr. Paul G. Johnson, although it doesn't say doctor on the cover. It just says Paul G. Johnson. It's really, really interesting because nobody out there, and I think most of the researchers in Pennsylvania, because of the nature of Bigfoot sightings here, we're almost forced not to ignore the kind of weird stuff that goes along with it.
Mm-hmm.
The UFOs or the weird lights or just these other, weird things that pop up with the reports. And reading this book, it was one of the first books that kind of, or the first anythings, really, not just books, that sort of let me know, it's okay to start talking about this weird stuff. Some people are going to push against it because, they don't want us to talk about that stuff. They want it to be a very simple, ape in the woods, and that's all it is. And if you start talking about this other stuff, you're muddying the waters. But the fact is that other stuff is there. And it was really Dr. Johnson's writing that just let me know, kind of like, okay, this is, I can talk about this stuff and hopefully not sound crazy. But
yeah, I agree with you on that. I definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah. Do you find that when you research this stuff, either with Dr. Johnson or otherwise, you're just running into that, the UFOs and the mystery lights and the orbs and stuff with these Bigfoot sightings?
Most of the sightings that we get, especially on the Bigfoot side, they don't really have a strange aspect. Most of the time, hey, you know, someone's driving down the road, they see one of these creatures cross in the woods, or people say, hey, you know, we believe we have a Bigfoot creature on our property. There's very few times that there's actually lights in the sky or these creatures do something different. Now, again, I think, you know, Paul would even tell you that a lot of these, we call them high, you know, being in Pennsylvania, we call them high strangeness cases. Longtime researcher Stan Gordon, he's the one that in 73, there was a huge UFO Bigfoot wave in Pennsylvania. And what kind of started a lot of this, you know, there would be UFO sightings and Bigfoot sightings, strange creatures that were even coming out of a UFO in Uniontown. So there has been a lot of weird things, especially in Pennsylvania, but they are still a small portion of the overall number of Bigfoot sightings.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll give you an example. There is, right from this book, case number 5320 is a York County case, and it's on Green Valley Road. It's not far from me. It's in a town called Seven Valleys, right outside of York. Mm-hmm. And completely randomly, I was talking to a woman. I have a woman there. She's in her 60s or 70s. I've never met her in person. I'm just guessing by her voice and by the amount of information she has. She's been keeping records. She's very interested in ghosts and ghost stories and the paranormal, mm-hmm. and so forth. And she will call me once every month or once every other month and just wants to talk and tell me stories and so forth. Mm-hmm. And she told me, and it matches up with the date in September 1982 when this sighting in the book was, the night before that sighting, her father had a UFO sighting in Seven Valleys, or, well, it's a mystery light sighting. So he went out in, and his fields were glowing. He said the whole field was glowing like a golden green. And I just happened to randomly like look up the date of this, the sighting on Green Valley Road. And sure enough, the next day there's a Bigfoot sighting. That kind of stuff I run into so often in Pennsylvania. It's bizarre. Like, again, you know, I can't say they're related, but it's these two strange things that happen within, you know, a day or two.
Yeah, that does happen in Pennsylvania. It doesn't happen that often, but our state seems to, I don't want to say a magnet for it, but it is actually well documented by researchers like Stan and Paul. There are other, you know, so-called cryptozoologists who think, hey, like you said, it's got to be an ape in the woods or nothing else. It can't disappear, or it can't have footprints, you know, leave, you know, footprints go into the middle of a snow-covered field and stop, can't shoot at it, and it still continues to walk, or shoot at it, and it turns into a ball of light. These creatures, in some of these cases in Paul's book, they appear to float. Just some weird aspects of some of these cases that a lot of researchers would just throw out. Paul decided not to throw those out, and, you know, this book, like you said, is a reprint, and there's some new material from the Bigfoot Phenomenon PA, published in 2007. Well, his first book was the Pennsylvania Bigfoot with Joan Jeffers, and they covered 160 cases of Bigfoot in Pennsylvania. I actually call that, jokingly, we call that book the Bible of Bigfooting in Pennsylvania, because it's really scientific. It breaks down a lot of behaviors of the creature, what it looks like, and in charts and things like that. It's really a great book. If I could only own one book on Pennsylvania Bigfoot, it would be the first one. The aspect in Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania is a huge state, and there's like 44,000, over 44,000 land miles, and 59% of it is forested.
Right.
And the interesting thing about Pennsylvania is 90% of the residents inhabit only about 10% of the total state.
Right.
So, and we rank fifth or sixth in total number of sightings in the country. So if people are seeing something, it's just, we don't know what the whole phenomena is.
Sure, yeah. When I talk to people about Pennsylvania, I often say, like, imagine the country of the United States. There's, you know, the East Coast is very populated. The West Coast is very populated. There's a whole lot in the middle that's not very populated. And Pennsylvania kind of mirrors that. I think sometimes people think Pennsylvania, they think Pittsburgh and Philadelphia.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, but in the middle of the state, there's a whole lot of forested land and not a huge population in there. The best way is look at light pollution maps. If you look at light pollution maps, you can tell, yes, where people are not. And there's a lot in the middle of the state where people are not.
Mm-hmm.
One very, very interesting case in here is Sam Sherry's case. Was it from 1988? Did you ever meet Sam Sherry?
No, it's actually funny that you actually talked about Sam Sherry. See, Paul gives us a lot of his old research material. And in one of the articles, it had an article on Sam Sherry. Unfortunately, I never got to meet Sam. I came into the PBS in 2000. but I was never able to go up and meet him. Sam spent a lot of time after that sighting, which is in the book. Just a really very colorful man. He had a Bigfoot trap out there. He tried to catch it, and he spent the latter part of his life trying to prove, to capture Bigfoot or prove he was real. Really wish I could have met the gentleman.
Yeah, he seemed like quite a character from the book. Very unique description of the creature. It was about 7 foot, and it looked like it had mange or was scratching itself, he said. And it almost looked like it had a mohawk haircut from the way he described
it. It's actually drawings in the book. That's right.
Yeah. It's an excellent description in the book. I, as much as I'm telling here, I'm not giving away half of the story. It's just a totally fascinating story. He was actually touched by the creature. It came up close enough to touch him.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that is so rare and so amazing. And what a brave dude also.
I agree.
I would have had to change my underwear, I think.
I've been asked this so many times, what would you do if you've actually saw one? And sure, you could say, hey, I'd do this or I'd do this. I would. How do you actually know? Even though I spent a good portion of my life researching this, you don't know until it would actually happen. And that's the reason I do this. I want to see one of these things. I've never seen one. I've heard some strange yells, things like that, but I have never seen one. And I envy the people who get into it after they've seen one. I'm actually doing it the other way. I've read about the eyewitnesses, and I've talked to a lot of eyewitnesses who claim they've seen them. A lot of them, it's changed their lives. They're driving down the road, something crosses the road or looks into their window, something that science says doesn't exist, and all of a sudden they're seeing this. So how you would react, hopefully I find out one day, and I'll let you know.
Just to get off topic just for a little bit, are you getting any more reports than usual this year?
Well, we actually just did a case actually 2 weeks ago here in Beaver County where an eyewitness was sitting overlooking the river, and he had this weird feeling like he was being watched. So he drove past this area, a small area of woods, and he claimed this creature was about almost 7 foot tall and had green glowing eyes, and it stepped out from the tree and looked at him. We were able to check out when we got the report, it was probably about a month afterwards because it happened, I think, May 19th or something like that. So we just went out about 2 weeks ago because we just got it. And they claimed there was a print there. They took a picture of a print, and they said it was three-toed, but you couldn't tell from the picture. We checked the exact area, and there was nothing there because of all the heavy rains that we get off and on lately.
Sure.
But I went down there and checked the area out. It was on a big hill. It looked like that there was an area where something might have went through, but it was too, you couldn't tell for sure. And then we received an older report here in Beaver County. So the last couple have been in my county, in Beaver County. So it seems to be this year might be a better year for reports.
Mm-hmm.
Some years, we hardly get anything. So it also depends. I think the reports are out there, especially in my county, in Beaver County. People just don't really know who to go to, even though we've been out there for a long time.
Yeah.
It's a very tight-lipped community. They don't want to talk about things like this.
It's the same here. The Pennsylvania Dutch over on this side of the state, they do not talk. They just don't talk.
Yes.
Very hard to get them to talk. This year has been more active than any for me as far as getting reports, both old and new.
Uh-huh.
I've gotten more reports probably in the past 2 months than I have in most years normally. It's been
That's good.
Yeah, it's been really, really active. I was just wondering if it was the same across the state, and I don't know what to attribute that to. I don't know if maybe my name's just getting out there enough now, where people are like, this is the guy for York County, or if it's just random. I don't know what to attribute that to, but I do find it interesting. Like all of a sudden, it seems like out of nowhere, I'm just getting reports, like 3 a month as opposed to maybe that many in a year.
And I think this year is going to be a. We have another report or so pending also. So it's an older report in Beaver County, but the person has yet to send in the report. So this is why we do it. One of the things is, we're a document, an archive group. We archive old newspaper articles, and we don't want this to get all of this stuff to get lost. We intend to publish, we're calling it the CAP, the Cryptid Archive Project. And we're attempting to, a little later in the year, get people's emails and start sending out some of these old newsletters, old clippings via email so that they have it for their records and they can use it for their research. Because it's important, we believe, to get this stuff out. A lot of the newer researchers don't really do things like that. If it's not on the internet, it doesn't count, type thing.
Right.
Well, a lot of old stuff you know, in the archives, like your book, and sure. your book on a Pennsylvania Bigfoot, which is excellent, by the way. So,
thank you.
That's what we need more of.
Yeah, that was a labor of love. It came out of my first book, and then you know, I find myself doing. I'm going to try to do the whole country. We'll see. Some states do not have as much as Pennsylvania does. But yeah, no, that's a fantastic service, and sharing reports is. It's so important and it's so difficult these days. I don't know what the attitude is where, you know, people are afraid to share a report. I understand if you don't want to give a witness name. Sometimes witnesses want to be private. Or if it's private,
yes.
If it's private property and you don't want to share that, that's absolutely completely understandable. But the other details of the report, we should be sharing this stuff.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
It's only going to help everybody. So, no, that's a fantastic service. And, you know, on behalf of the community, thank you for doing that.
We're going to be starting that, I'll list it. You know where to send it. You know where to send me an email, and you know we want to do it like maybe a once a month type thing, and send it out to everybody at once. You know, have a big list and just boom. You know, make it easy as we can. Be looking for that. I know you're a friend on Facebook, so you'll be seeing it on Facebook, and hopefully you can get signed up. I'd like to send you a bunch of that stuff too. So
sure, yeah. Yeah, back to the book. Some of that sort of hard data, it is in this book. And he'll break down like the number of sightings by counties, the sort of what he calls hotspot, you know, during different times, different parts of different counties.
Uh-huh.
And one of the most interesting things to me is the time of day of sightings, where, you know, it seems to be this sort of known thing that you have to be out at night to see these creatures, but the data doesn't really reflect that so much. I mean, I think it's 52% of the sightings were nighttime sightings. You know, the rest were daytime. It's pretty even. It's almost 50-50. So
mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty interesting, like that kind of data he collected that just sort of, it seems like the sort of common sense in the Bigfoot world is, oh, you got to be out at night to see him. But that doesn't seem to be supported by the data.
Yeah, I found that, like, when I read that too, when I started into the field, I'm like, wow, you know, these creatures are more active at night. And it's probably still slightly a little bit more at night, probably.
Yeah.
I think they probably still keep themselves. Remember, that's just reported sightings also. And
right.
I think sometimes that data can be skewed because, like here in our county, just for an example, about, you know, about time of year, we seem to get our reports from, say, September, and they end in January. I mean, very few. The one we got a couple weeks ago was one of the exceptions. Very few were, like, in the summertime. So some people say, hey, these things migrate or blah, 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 you know. Well, I can't tell you that. All I can tell you is the dates and when most of our sightings occur here. And they do seem to follow a pretty rigid pattern of the reported ones, I should say. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, people are out more during the day. So you're more likely, you know, you're more likely to see something because there's just more people around to see it. So, you know, that could certainly account for it as well. But I did find that probably the most interesting, most surprising, I would say, of all the data charts he had in there. He lists a good few cases in here. There's an appendix with just, you know, sighting reports. But, I mean, I would recommend this to anyone who's interested in the topic, not just in Pennsylvania. Certainly, the cases he uses to represent what he's talking about are, for the most part, from Pennsylvania, or I think 100% in this book from Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
But the ideas he talks about are universal, and this strangeness, and while we do have the sort of strange features that kind of coincide with Bigfoot sightings in Pennsylvania, that's not limited to Pennsylvania. It does happen elsewhere. And what Dr. Johnson suggests might be responsible for this is a sort of quantum theory in regards to the creatures, that they're able to somehow access quantum physics in ways that we don't quite understand. Am I explaining that fairly?
Yeah, basically, and again, it's a very hard subject to grasp, and believe me, for me to explain it fully would be, you know, I have to be a rocket scientist, but it's basically the observation determines a reality. Basically, it basically states that the creature has to be observed in order to see it. It has to be an observer, and it is kind of a, you know, a strange thing to wrap your head around. Paul basically, you know, says in the book, and I'll even quote it, and after his 40 years of investigating Bigfoot reports, he comes to the determination that the creature is not a flesh and blood animal that continually resides and remains hidden in the woods. because he basically states that, you know, creature kind of violates the laws of classic physics. And in there is a chart about like between a Bigfoot and a bear, and he states, hey, a bear can be tracked through the woods, a Bigfoot can't. And he talks about, you know, over 4,000 bears are harvested in Pennsylvania, but Bigfoot has been shot at a lot of times with no effect. Bears can be found dead due to natural causes, but to date, no one has found a dead Bigfoot that we know of. Okay. Also, 300 bears have been killed each year in PA by car traffic, but there's been no reported Bigfoot kills from a car. So he kind of states it in that, like if it was a real animal, like a bear, even if it was a very, very limited number of these creatures, he said that they should still follow the rules of classic physics, and he says that this creature doesn't. So this is how he tries to explain it through science, through quantum science. And again, I can't claim to know a ton about that. I know that longtime researcher Ron Moorhead, he also published a book called The Quantum Bigfoot, and I don't know if you've read that yet.
I have,
and it's I read about half of it. I kind of jump around a lot between books, and he has a lot of good points too. You know, he says about Nikola Tesla, said, you know, if you want to know the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration. Could these creatures somehow be able to raise their vibrational energy and somehow to appear, and I want to say appear, to be seemingly invisible?
Right.
And even Einstein said, you know, quantum physics would be like spooky action at a distance. So there's a lot of weird stuff with the quantum theory. I wish I knew more about it myself. I've tried to, you know, research it and learn about it.
In the book, I have to say, Dr. Johnson does a very, very good job of making it understandable. It might be hard for you and I to sit here and explain it, but if you read the book, he explains it in such a way that it makes it very friendly to the layman. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to have a PhD in physics to understand what he's talking about, the way he writes it. So I would really recommend, like, if people are interested in that side of things, in checking out the book, you know, for that chapter alone. Like I said, the whole book is really interesting, really fascinating. But that chapter really opened my mind. And I want to make the point that when I say they can access the quantum realm, or they have this, it's not like they have a box of buttons, you know, where they're where they're pressing these buttons or something that allows them to do that. It might be a very natural aspect of them, you know, as natural as it is for us to do, you know, walk or do something else. They may be able to enter these states, so, you know, like you said, raise their vibrations or however it's done. The tendency for so many people to, I think, just go into that place where they say, well, they must be demons, and that is avoided completely in this book. It's handled in a very, well, let's look at this, it's very unusual activity, but let's look at it in terms of science and see if there's something within science that could explain this kind of unusual activity.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, there's some drawings and stuff about, you know, showing an electron and things like that. And the best thing I could suggest for people, like you said, if you're really interested in it, is to read it yourself and you know, try to get a grasp on what the quantum aspect is. I think Paul does do a good job on that as far as, like, you know, for a guy like me to try to explain it. I can understand it more than I can explain it to you, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think people can probably hear we're both sort of struggling on how to explain it. Trust me, the book is very, very friendly. The way he explains it is very, very easy to grasp, which isn't easy. It isn't easy to write that kind of science and make it easily understood. So that's one of my favorite things about this book. It's just wonderfully written for the layman. You don't have to be a physicist to understand it or have a degree in science or something like that.
This book itself, for a good majority of Bigfoot researchers, they're not going to agree with some of his findings, but
sure.
The actual, you know, he was out there, and I should explain, when he's out there researching, you know, he's out there looking for physical evidence of a physical creature. It seems to be physical when people are seeing it here. My friend, good friend Fred Saluga always says, well, where does it come from and where does it go? He always loves saying that. So it's like, yeah, when you're seeing it, it's, you know, it's in this realm, it's present. You know, where does it go? I mean, what does it do? I mean, if you're thinking it's a physical flesh and blood creature, you know, would it hide in caves? Well, where would it go? Would it have to go somewhere where it's not going to be seen? So you're going to want to go to the more remote places. You know, there's over 900,000 registered hunters in Pennsylvania. And for those 2 weeks in deer season, they're all over the place. So, you know, there are a lot of things. Hey, you know, if this thing was really real, shouldn't we have more proof of it? And I think there is some key, some little piece, hidden piece in this Bigfoot phenomenon that we don't quite get, whether it is a quantum or whatever the thing may be. I think that we are missing a piece of the puzzle.
Oh,
or
I agree.
I think we would have a lot more. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I agree, absolutely. And I've made the same point here in York County. We have forest. We have farmland. We have areas where things could hide. But the number of sightings we have, we'd have to have a breeding population here. And it just doesn't make sense. Where is a breeding population hiding here? Because they're seen all times of year. We get them, we might get more reports certain times of year, but I've taken reports all times of year. It's just very, very difficult to believe that this is a natural animal, like you were saying, like a bear. I mean, it may in fact be a very natural animal and just do things that we don't understand. But
it might have a certain aspect. I don't want, you summed it up when you said a lot of it just doesn't make sense. And it just doesn't make sense. I could say it over and over again. Eventually, we should, if not have a specimen, have a lot more evidence of it.
Right.
I know our ground, and I know you can talk about the ground and the forest and the leaf litter, and you can go on and on. But, there are prints, but there's not a lot of them out there. Not a lot of people are finding them. You do find them occasionally. I unfortunately have never found. Well, we did find two up in 2002 as part of a when I was part of the PBS up in the Chestnut Ridge, and it was 1 14-inch and 1 7. They were right next to each other. I was up on an old logging road on top of a mountain, and there was leaves in it. So you actually had to. We walked past it again, and I'm like, wait a minute, it kind of looks like a print. And pulled a couple leaves out. Wow, it's there. It was easy. It could have been easy to miss.
Wow.
So. But other than that, I mean, and someone else cast it, and they have the prints. But I myself have never found. I've found imprints, but you see an imprint, it's like, well, it takes a lot for me to want to cast something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just going to cast. So
I found I'll say two or three, maybe four, what I call maybe prints, where they seem to be prints, but then I seriously doubt they're going to convince anybody else, even another Bigfoot person, much less a skeptic. They just happened to be in the area where I was investigating, and they looked like, it was vaguely the shape of a foot, but it wasn't that detailed, that kind of thing. So that tends to be, I think, what most of these are. And like you said, it's rare to find a good, clean footprint.
Yeah, and there's some out there that they're finding them every single time. I'm like, well, hey, you want to question that a little bit? I mean, I don't think that they're very, very rare to find. I mean, that's the second best thing you can see other than having a sighting. Maybe get something on tape, but you find a nice print. I have a lot of friends in the field, and most of them haven't found, or they get lucky if they find one. So we actually have two in our possession. One of them is a picture in this book of that 74 four-toed cast. We have that original, that actual original cast that Paul gave to our group. And we have the other one, too, the one that Bob Francis that found in 90, I think it's 95. We have that original, too. So we have two original casts, but they're not our cast.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have some nice casts from other group members, and we were able to get a cast from my friend John McDonald from the 1974 Sykesville, Maryland. The gentleman let us copy it down at Dr. Cabela's. So we actually have, there's only two or three of those in existence. I mean, he has the original, only two or three other copies of it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've never
group
seen,
has one of those.
I've never even seen that print. And
I grew up near there. Did you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I've never seen it. Didn't know they had prints in there.
Yeah. There was a policeman took the actual cast. And I think the gentleman's name is George Lutz, I believe, of the Eastern Puma Network. I think he's the one that was there when they took it, and they actually gave him one of the two prints.
Wow.
So we have one of the, we have a rare, I actually probably should get it and probably take a picture of it and post it on Facebook for people to see. I've been wanting to do that. You kind of forget with everything else going on. But,
sure, yeah.
So yeah, we do have a collection from other researchers too that we get, we'll trade them a cast, or we'll say, hey, can we take a copy of that cast? Our friend Fred Saluga and his group, Fayette County Bigfoot Research Project, they have three. They found three. They're really nice, long prints. So we were able to get copies of those also. So, you know, we're lucky that we work with people that we're able to get, they'll let us copy them. We basically just want Pennsylvania and Ohio cast if we can get them. You know?
Right, yeah. Are the three-toed and four-toed tracks still popping up, or is that more something from the past?
It seems to be the three- and four-toed were more in the 70s. Now, I don't really know if anyone has got any three- or four-toed cast of late. I mean, they could. I just don't know about them.
Mm-hmm.
But they seem to be more of like a 70s phenomena, and a lot of them in conjunction with UFOs or weird sightings. So the one in 74 that we had was December 29th, and this creature was in Allegheny County. It was like 4 days after Christmas. There was Christmas lights on this tree, and this creature came and looked at it and was looking at the Christmas lights. And the creature turned around and went back into the woods. And the Pennsylvania Center for UFO Research, which is the group that Paul took over, several members went out there that night, and they casted that early in the morning. So that's a rare cast of somebody actually seeing the creature and getting a print right in that same area. It's
wow.
Rare for that to happen.
Oh, yeah,
so
I
tell people, I'm like, hey, this is the best evidence that our organization has, but it was from Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Paul's group. So, and that's why we do take it, and we show it to a lot of people. It is, if I would have to say, was this from a Bigfoot creature, I would have to say that over anything I've seen.
Was that a three- or four-toed?
That was a four-toed.
Four-toed one.
And that picture is in the book. And,
okay, all right, yeah.
Yeah, yep. You'll see it. It's in the book. And the other one also, that we have that original copy also.
Yeah, we were getting three-toed tracks here, but again, it seemed to end in the 70s.
Uh-huh.
I don't recall any four-toed tracks from here. Even other Bigfoot people give me grief on the three-toed tracks, and, you know, I don't know what to tell them other than that, you know, they were seen in the western part of the state, they were seen on this side of the state, and Boggy Creek, I think, had some mm-hmm. three-toed tracks down there. I did hold one of the casts of the three-toed tracks from around here, and I don't know if it was the same, type track. It was long, and to me it looked like the toes could have been, it's called a syndactyly, I think. They're sort of forged together. So, in fact, it might have been a five-toed creature, but the toes mm-hmm. were sort of genetically never separated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just looking at the cast, because it looks like three, like, big toes, you know what I mean? That could have been other toes kind of forged together, but I'm not sure. I'm certainly
not. Yeah, Stan Gordon has got a cast like that from back at the Westmoreland Mall in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And there actually was, in our local newspaper in November of 73 here in Beaver County, that there was some light seen. And some lady claimed that she saw, a large gorilla-looking creature in the area. And they did. There was a picture of a three-toed footprint here in Beaver County. I believe Stan probably has that cast, but he's never, to date, I don't think he's ever shown anybody it. So,
yeah, the one I had was from Bob Chance. He let me hold it and photograph it, and I keep meaning to call him and see if I can get a copy of that, because it had been repaired several times, and I know he was very worried about it. You know, he was like, please don't, you know, please be careful with this, don't break it. I'd love to get a copy of that, because there's very few of the tracks around here were cast in the 70s, and they're all very, very precious. So I'll have to contact Bob Chance and see if he'll let me get a copy of that, because it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've met Bob Chance one or two times when he was at TA Bigfoot Society conference in Gannett, and a wonderful guy, wonderful researcher. He's been around for a long time, like Paul has.
Yeah, Bob's been around forever. I mean, he was poking at this stuff, and most of the articles I dig out locally, you know, from the 70s and 80s, I think, you know, 90% or more of them mention Bob in some way. He's some way involved in investigating the cases. So
yeah, our friend Rick Fisher, I believe you know Rick.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
He was up at our conference this year, and he brought me a whole huge file, books of old newspaper articles, because he wanted to add to our library, and he knows that we collect them. And it was like Christmas time for me. I mean, and there was a lot of Bob Chance articles in there, a lot, and a couple of pictures of him with three-toed cats. So it was like Christmas morning and when he brought them, and he brought them like on a Friday night, and it was like I was still looking through them at midnight, even though we had to get up early to go to the conference the next day. I'm like, I'm so excited, you know. I'm a geek, though, you know. So what am I?
No, I'm the same way with these articles.
If you drive through Pennsylvania summer, you know, you're like, oh, look at all these places to hide. Then you go in the winter, it's like you see all the trees without leaves. You're like, really? Could something really live in there? You know what I mean? You kind of change your tune a little bit, but where do they go? Where do they live?
That's
they have to be in some of the deepest parts of the forest, underground. I mean, I don't know.
That's the biggest question, and I have an article in the latest volume of Woodnox, and in that article, I just talk about 8 square miles in York County. So that's all it is, mm-hmm. just 8 square miles, and the incredible number of sightings we have in this area called Delta Peach Bottom. To account for the number of sightings, you know, again, they're every time of year, so either they're living there or they're going through that area on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So if they're living there, then there has to be young ones there, and presumably, you know, young creatures make mistakes. You know, that they're just uh-huh. you're not usually born, you know, knowing everything and with all the skills of an adult. It just doesn't happen. You know, beyond what is it eating, how is it supporting itself, how are family groups organized? With the number of hunters and the number of, like, open carry gun owners in York County, I just, you know, it just seems to me like there can't be family groups here. There can't, because where are the young ones? Where are they hiding them? You know, where are the Bigfoot playpens where they keep these things so they don't wander into the road or whatever, you know, whatever the case would be. So,
you know, like you said, a lot of it just doesn't make sense. I mean, I sit there and I try, okay, well, if they watch who their number one predator is, and that's man, they do what, you know, we don't, you know, we're more in the suburbs and stuff. Well, they're in the woods as far back as they can. You know, although they're seen day and night, I still think that they move and do more activity at night. We do it in the day. They kind of mirror what we do, and they do the opposite. So they kind of, and that would make sense for a species. If you want to survive, stay away from your apex predator, which is man.
Yeah, I have to say, as I say all this stuff and I ask all these doubts, I am an absolute believer. I say this stuff as someone who I've looked into witnesses' eyes when they've told me this stuff. I've seen them, their hands shake. You know, I absolutely believe what the witnesses are telling me. I am a believer. I'm also a questioner. I want to know, you know, where are, like you said, where do they go and where do they come from?
Yeah, I've seen them too. I've talked to the eyewitnesses like you. I've seen grown giant men, really big guys. They get goosebumps and they say, oh, I can't believe I've seen this. And years after, in the 70s, and they're telling me that it's still affecting them. So some of these people should be actors, because, you know, I think they could fool anybody if they're lying. And I don't think they're lying. I think they're seeing something that's not supposed to be there. I do believe that.
Right.
What the whole phenomena is, I can't tell you. I wish I could. I really wish I could give more information, but I don't just want to say something the fact of saying it. If I don't know, I'm just going to tell you I don't know.
I think that's the honest answer, right?
Yeah.
Until we know, we have to say, you know, I don't know. I can make guesses.
You can guess, yeah.
I have theories, but it amounts to science fiction until we can prove it, you know?
Yep.
That's the real thrust of my sort of argument with this, and to make people understand that I think people are seeing something. I think it's something very real. It's something that leaves footprints and hair and manipulates objects. It's not a ghost in as much as it ethereal or something, you know. It's very much here, you know. It's as real as the microphone in front of me, but it's also doesn't act like a bear, for sure. You know, it doesn't act like a mountain gorilla. We can find mountain gorillas. You know, it might be hard to find them, but we'll find them eventually.
You'll eventually find them, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, as far as us, too, you know, our group, if you want to talk about Bigfoot, we, you know, we research everything from the dog man to creatures that they call gargoyles. I mean, and I've talked to the eyewitnesses there, too, and, you know, you see the fear in their eyes. They're like, you know, you're not going to believe this. I just saw something that looks like a werewolf, or I saw this big winged entity. It crossed the road. Again, these things are not supposed to exist, but I think somehow what these things are, I don't know, but I do believe people are seeing them. I mean, now, could those be some kind of a quantum animal also? Interdimensional, quantum, some paranormal, whatever the phrase you want to use. I think especially with some of these other creatures, a lot of that stuff fits even more even than Bigfoot. Because,
right,
you know, at least Bigfoot will leave prints and things like that. These other creatures, scant evidence, you know.
Yeah, those gargoyle sightings are weird too, and there's been a few of those kind of scattered throughout the state. They're kind of bat-winged, like large, thin humans, right? That people are seeing.
Yeah. Well, in Allentown '93, there was one. I think in Susquehanna, there was some sightings of one, and here in Butler County, which is where you went to the conference, in Chicora is where the alleged Chicora gargoyle was from. I think it was 2011 to 2013. and the one, the drawing from up in Butler here mirrors the drawing in 1993 in Allentown, PA, almost to a T. And it was Stan Gordon got the original report on that, and the eyewitness whom I met drew it. And I saw that. I says, "Oh my God, I saw that. I've seen this. So where is it at?" So I looked through my files. I must have spent like an hour looking through my files, and I'm like, "Wait a minute! I saw this drawing in an old Bigfoot newsletter. Believe it or not, Billy Green wrote it. It was called about the Bigfoot News, I believe it was called." So I look at it, and boom, there's that drawing. I'm like, "It's the same thing." And there was a number on there, and I actually got to call the lady and contacted her, and her number was still good. And this was, I think she put it in there in like 97 or 90, you know, and the number was still there. So we talked. She's a Facebook friend now. She told me it was like a third-hand story about what this creature crossed the road. And when it got to the other side of the road, it put its wings up, and it just shot straight up. It didn't flap its wings. It just shot straight up in the air. Now, what can do that?
Right.
I would like to know. No jetpack or anything. They didn't hear anything. No jetpack. It looked like a natural, well, not a natural, it looked like a real flesh and blood animal. It just took off.
I think some of the Mothman reports, it shoots straight up like that without, yes, know, it doesn't flap its wings. It spreads its wings and just shoots up, which is bizarre. I mean, that's just weird.
Very, very bizarre. I mean,
are you, more Dogman reports over time, are you finding?
We get Dogman reports. We don't get a lot of them. The last one that we got was, we investigated, it was last year, I think it was last year in June, but the sighting took place the year before. It was up in Crawford County. That was the last one that we've got. They're sporadic. We do get them. People are talking about them more. I just don't think that they happen as much.
Mm-hmm,
we get, you know, the ones that we get are up in the Chenango, around Mercer County, around Chenango Valley Reservoir up there.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got one, you know, a couple in Beaver County, one in Beaver County, one in Allegheny County. I think we've maybe got a total of 10 or 11 through the year. So it's not like we've gotten a lot. We haven't. We think those sightings are out there too, but people, I still think, are reluctant, especially around here, to talk about
it. Yeah.
I mean, hey, it's bad enough you say, "I saw a giant ape." Somebody's saying, "Well, I saw a giant thing that looks like a werewolf." You're not going to believe this, you know.
Right. Yeah, it has to be harder to talk. I mean, the stranger things are, the harder it must be to talk about them. And Bigfoot, you know, with Finding Bigfoot and various other shows, it's kind of, that has done us a favor. Like the show or not, I believe it's done us a favor as researchers in that I think people are a little more accepting and a little more likely to talk about it than they were before.
Mm-hmm.
Because Bigfoot's in the pop culture, and I think, you know, Dogman might be getting there, but yeah, I think you're right. I think people are probably even more reluctant to talk about that. And I do think they're rare to be seen in general, but I do think the reports seem to be increasing. I wasn't into this as hardcore as I am now, but, you know, I always kind of followed it over the year, and I don't remember even hearing about Dogman 10 years ago, say.
Yeah, one of the very first cases that we did, believe it or not, was in 2007. It was over in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. We actually met the eyewitness at that Bigfoot conference in Ohio. And she claims that this thing, it was walking across the road. It was 2 or 3 in the morning. And it looked like, she said it looked like the creature from American Werewolf in London. And it had patches of skin and patches of fur, almost like it was morphing or changing. But the odd part about it ran towards the power substation. And we got that in several other reports, too. And another report up in Newcastle where this creature, they saw a small creature walking around the car right before a major thunderstorm and lightning storm. And the common denominator in some of the ones that we've got, there seems to be like a power source or some kind of energy source when these creatures are being seen. Even the one that up in Chenango Valley, the one that was standing by a telephone pole. So is there a connection, or am I reaching too much? But at least two of them, these creatures went directly towards the power substation. So if they were quantum or whatever you want to say, however you want to say it, did they need some kind of an energy source to manifest to go back and forth? So again, I'm not saying that they are, but it is just something kind of quirky and weird with some of these Dogman sites.
Yeah, that is strange. Well, there's a lot of strangeness that follows them. Well, there have been reports of them, you know, eating it, roadkill, or eating it,
yeah,
supposed kills and stuff. So they do act like animals, and as far as that goes, but I mean, there's nothing. I would say, at least in the fossil record, there are things that look like Bigfoot. We don't have anything in the fossil record that is Bigfoot, to our knowledge. Some would argue Gigantopithecus, but I don't really feel like that fits the bill. But maybe, you know, maybe over time it would. They'll prove that it did. But there are at least upright things, you know, that are covered in hair in the fossil record.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the fossil record that even looks like Dogman. Like, you know?
Yep, I know.
Canines are, you know, evolutionary speaking, they're kind of, you know, that form works. There's a reason why, you know, they've been around as long as they have, and they haven't changed that much, because it's a very efficient form, and it tends to work. So how is this thing going to evolve, you know, hands? It seems completely out of the realm of natural evolution to me.
It is another thing. It makes even less sense than a Bigfoot. I mean, and I believe me, the people I've talked to, I think they've seen what they've seen. I'm not doubting them.
Right.
But it's another thing. It just doesn't make any damn sense.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And your book, by the way, not to change the subject, but I really did like your Beyond the Seventh Gate book. I thought it was really good.
Oh, I'm working on the follow-up right now. So hopefully by the end of summer, which gets even weirder. I found some new information. It still has got the historical stuff in it, but I found a lot of really, really strange witness reports that are in there, and then put in some of my own experience. It definitely takes a turn for the strange.
Well, I will share it. I do share your stuff on my pages.
Oh, yeah.
So.
You've been very kind about that, so thank you for that. Thank you. Okay, well, the book we were talking about tonight is called Chasing the Elusive Pennsylvania Bigfoot, A Cryptid from Another Reality. It's by Paul G. Johnson. Again, that's published by Visionary Living. You can find it wherever books are sold. Gets my highest recommendation. Brian, thank you so much for coming on and talking with me about it. If you see Dr. Johnson, please give him my best. Tell him I really appreciate his work and I love his book.
Oh, I will tell him thanks. I'll probably see him in about a month or so. And I appreciate you having me on and a chance to talk about the book. I thank you.
Sure thing. And we'll have you back again and we'll talk more about your research and so forth.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts. Music, books, art, podcasts, and more. DarkHollerArts.com. If you're on Facebook, look up the Strange Familiars Gathering Group. Join and share your stories, creations, get news about the show, and more. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. Go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com for more.
Gain till a cat, of sorrow and psych in a black shat. I shall gain to the devil's name, I feel I come home again. again to a crawl, with sorry and psych in a black throw. And I shall gain to the devil's name, I kill, I come home again.